This is Take Care from WRVO Public Media. Thanks for joining us for this conversation on health and wellness. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith.
We ask what the state of healthcare is today and where it's headed. Presidential candidates aren't the only ones on the hook. Many Americans are asking, what's next? Dan Goldberg joined us from the offices of Politico. He's a healthcare reporter for Politico Pro, covering healthcare politics and policy in the U.S. Thanks for joining us today, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to start with the not small question of why is healthcare so expensive in some places like the U.S. and even certain areas?
Okay, I'm going to give you one of the simpler answers to that question. We pay our doctors and hospitals a lot more money than other countries do. That is, according to a lot of study that's been done, one of the driving factors of healthcare costs. A secondary factor, and this is where it starts to get a little more complicated, is how much we spend on drugs. But if you take those two together, you've really got a good idea of why healthcare in the United States is so expensive. It's what we pay. It's the prices for doctors and for hospitals and for administrators. That level is where the money is going.
Well, that's one of the simpler explanations I've ever heard, so thank you for that. Now, even though the U.S. does pay the most, I think it is, per capita on health, we don't have the number one health outcomes. Why that discrepancy?
No, not by far. In the United States, we're sort of middle of the pack, depending on how you want to be grading. That has a lot to do with socioeconomic factors. I'm oversimplifying, but only to a point. Your health outcomes have a lot to do with your income. And we have some very poor and very rural parts of the United States. It also has a lot to do with your race. We know that the life expectancy of white middle class or upper middle class people is a lot longer than black middle class people. Why that is very complicated and multi-generational. But now we're also starting to see the average lifespan in the United States decline, in part because of the opioid epidemic. We're seeing so-called deaths of despair, whether it's opioids or alcohol, especially in the middle part of the country, in the Midwest, in Appalachia, these areas that have traditionally been left behind either because the economies have suffered or because of other economic factors, you're starting to see a greater decrease in overall health, but even in the basic benchline of life expectancy. And so the United States, being as big a country as it is, we have these pockets that do a lot worse than a lot of our, for example, European competitors or other Western developed countries. That's one big reason why you see such variability.
There are differences in health care costs and health insurance costs in different areas of the U.S. Does that go back to what you were talking about before with the cost of doctors and prescriptions, or are there other reasons too?
Sure. I mean, there are other reasons, but that is a big part of it. If you are in New York City, for example, the cost of healthcare is much higher than it is in Topeka. But by the same token, what plays into it is how rural you are. Costs of healthcare in Alaska are, even though it's a small, low population state, are very high because it's very remote. So there are a lot of factors that can contribute to the costs of healthcare. And obviously, it also is relative to the income of the population. So what seems expensive to people in Vail, Colorado, might not seem as expensive to people in the Upper West Side of Manhattan.
So because healthcare is so expensive in the U.S., we are always talking about ways to get more bang for our buck. So what are some of the ideas currently being bandied about?
One of the most popular ones are what are called value-based care. And essentially, federal and state governments are moving away from this idea that a doctor or a hospital would get paid for every service they provide you. So traditionally, you go to the doctor, they run three tests, they get paid three times. So there's an incentive for a doctor to run not only more tests, but the more expensive tests. And that's been determined to be probably not the best incentive structure. So what's now in vogue is what they call value-based care. They're going to pay a set fee for all the care you receive, and you would get more money if you keep the patient healthy. So there are bonuses or penalties for how a patient does. That's one model. Another model is the insurance company will determine that knee replacement, for example, will cost, let's just say, $10,000. And then the doctor and the hospital have an incentive to get all your care for that knee replacement, including any post-op or what have you, in that $10,000 range. And that's another way to sort of limit the amount of work being done on a patient. And then finally, there's a big movement toward preventive care. Can we keep people well before they get sick? And obviously, the idea is if people don't need a hospital or a doctor, or if people can get a visit at home or a text message from a nurse instead of going to an emergency room, that would save the system a lot of money. And that's, you know, what I just said in 30 seconds is obviously a lot harder to do in practice, but that's where the system is trying to find some savings.
So health insurance is obviously a big part of the equation as far as the cost of healthcare goes, as you alluded to. Probably the biggest change in health insurance over the recent years has been the advent of Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. So how do you think the ACA has helped or not helped healthcare overall?
It's a very good question. There's two big parts to the ACA. The first is what we typically think of purchasing private healthcare. And that has enabled millions of people to purchase health insurance with subsidies from the federal government. They are able to afford their premiums. There's also the Medicaid expansion, which is for people just over the poverty line, have been now qualified for Medicaid. And that's made a huge difference for millions of people who would never have been able to afford insurance before. So taken together, what the Affordable Care Act has unquestionably done is provided health insurance to millions of more Americans. Now, the flip side of that is that it did not do very much to control costs. So a lot of people may have insurance, but their deductibles may be $3,000, $4,000. And for a lot of people, that is well more than they are able to pay. Their premiums may be very high if they do not qualify for subsidies. So it's eating up more and more of their household income. So without really tackling costs, Obamacare has been able to provide people insurance, but not necessarily peace of mind.
And now the next step is we enter the 2020 election, and some of the biggest things that are being talked about or terms that are being used are universal health care and Medicare for all. These two terms mean a lot of different things to different people, but can you just briefly explain what the most common meanings of those terms are?
Sure. So the Democrats all want to provide health insurance at a more affordable price to more people. That's the aim. And the question among the varying candidates is how best to get there. So I think probably the simplest and most universal, for lack of a better word, is Bernie Sanders' plan, which is Medicare for all. And that would just be over 4 years. He takes the age of Medicare, which is right now 65, and slowly reduces it until it covers everyone. And you'd have your traditional Medicare, and it would act as basically a government health insurance plan and cover all your health care needs. And he would pay for that by raising taxes. His campaign promise is that what you spend now on health care for your family would just go to the federal government in form of increased taxes, and it would be a wash for most, and some would see less increase in their taxes than they're currently spending on health care. So that's sort of the far left end of the spectrum. Then you have a plan sort of like Kamala Harris, who has a bit longer of a transition period. She would take 10 years as opposed to Bernie's 4, that still moves the country toward a Medicare for all-like system. So there'd be basic services would be covered by the government. But then you'd have private insurance to pick up some of the ancillary services or to fill in so that there are lower co-pays. And then sort of more to the, I guess, of the right of the Democratic Party is where Mayor Pete Buttigieg or Joe Biden are, in more of a public option, where you'd have the ability to buy into Medicare. You wouldn't necessarily automatically get it. You'd have to pay something for it, as opposed to raising taxes on everyone. So those are sort of the three basic ideas floating around the Democratic Party. Obviously, there are nuances within each, and there are varying levels of political reality associated with each. Those give you a pretty good idea of where the Democrats are right now.
And then Republicans talk a lot about more access to health care versus better or more health insurance. Do we have any idea of what voters or citizens are supporting at this point via polls or other methods? Or are there other ideas out there that are capturing the public's attention?
I'd caution your listeners to be skeptical of polls they see, because a lot of this stuff depends on how you ask the question. We learned a lot of that when polls were conducted about Obamacare, which Obamacare always polled terribly. The Affordable Care Act polled much better. So just even changing the name changed the response. And that's been true of something like Medicare for All. When you ask people about the idea of providing health insurance to everybody, it sounds great and it polls pretty well. When you ask people about increasing taxes on everybody to pay for health insurance, obviously it polls much less favorably. So the polling is a little bit all over the place at this point, and I'm cynical by nature probably, but particularly cynical when it comes to polling a complicated idea like Medicare for All or a public option.
So what about on the state level? When the Affordable Care Act came in, some states, you know, embraced the idea, some did not. Are there ideas or things going on the state level now to help lower the cost of health insurance or health care?
I think at the state level is where you're seeing a lot of that value-based care that I talked about earlier. New York, for example, has tried to, through its Medicaid program, which covers about a third of all the people in New York, really incentivize hospitals to think of new payment systems where they are sort of rewarded for keeping people healthy. And that has tried in some small way to shift the idea away from you're going to get paid the more you do. And some of the large hospital systems have responded and sort of re-examined how they think about providing care. You're also seeing, for example, in North Carolina, a similar focus. A lot of men and women from the Obama administration are now actually working in North Carolina for various either healthcare organizations or health insurers or some for the governor down there. And again, trying to implement this idea of moving away from this fee-for-service model. So I think that's probably where you're seeing a lot of innovation at the state level. In Georgia, for example, if you're looking at more conservative states, there are ideas being floated around for a high-risk pool, which essentially just means we take the sickest people in our population and insure them separately so that the healthy people can keep lower rates and will subsidize the very sick. That hasn't had great success in other states that have tried it, but there's a lot more knowledge and data on people now than there was 5 or 10 years ago. So there's some, I suppose, hope that it might work. But that's sort of where a more conservative state is leaning.
So just to wrap this up, since you pay a lot more attention to this than most of us do, what are you most looking at either as far as problems or solutions to this rising cost of health insurance and health care?
I'm most interested in sort of how, especially Democrats, obviously because there's a primary now, how some of the national Democrats are thinking about paying for their plans. How do we talk to doctors and hospitals about the money they take in? When we started, I mentioned that one of the simpler ways to look at this is that the cost of what doctors and hospitals make is really a prime driver. But who can find a way to control those costs, to keep those costs from growing faster than inflation? Nobody's really been able to tackle that problem. And that's, I think, one of the most interesting challenges ahead for sort of controlling costs, is how do we control the literal price of healthcare?
Thanks again for joining us today, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me.